There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye. And that's where...
Did I ever participate in the school musicals? Bridget, I was the school musical guy. I was in Brigadoon. I was in Guys and Dolls. I was the whole smash.
I was going to say, you actually have a really lovely voice. You should... sing more often.
I should not sing more often. I'm not as good as I used to be. All right, Juan Carlos, hook us up.
Yeah, Mondays. I am recording on my end. All the buttons have been pushed that I can push. Hello, everyone. I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us. It is Monday, 25 March, the year 2024.
Yes, today we are going to do some news and some smiles, starting with the news. Kai, what caught your attention today?
So there's a really interesting article, and it's more zeitgeisty than it is actual news, but I figure it's worth people just giving a quick read. We'll put it on the show page. An article from the Wall Street Journal today about Lina Khan, the head of the Federal Trade Commission, who has been criticized at length by many Republicans for her stance on taking on corporate America, which goes from technology to many other parts of this economy. Great piece on how some Republicans, including Matt Gaetz of Florida, are now kind of in her corner, and they are in favor of what she is trying to do, which is take on, as I said, big business in a way that sort of aligns with parts of what the Republican Party is now trying to be, which is a friend of the worker. Credit Donald Trump and many other parts of how the very right wing of the Republican Party are going about things nowadays. But it's totally fascinating. And Khan's like, you know what? I will take allies wherever I can find them. And it's just it's you ought to read it. It's kind of wild.
The enemy of my enemy is my
friend. That's exactly right. Good for you. Good for you.
There it is.
Yeah.
That is cool. I was looking at that and just the photo of her with Matt Gaetz is just like, wow.
Yep.
So I've got two things. First, a quick follow-up and then the bigger news. So the quick follow-up is, I think it was last week or the week before, I had as my make me smile that the federal judges kind of got together and decided that the thing about judge shopping to do your case to try to overturn federal regulations was not a good thing. And perhaps they should do something about it. And they did. And they're trying to limit the practice. So Politico originally reported that story. Politico also had in Morning Money today how this is playing out in real time, which is that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has a new rule that would cap credit card late fees at $8 compared to $32. Lots of businesses do not like it, and so they are suing the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to try and say this is unconstitutional and unfair and all the things. They brought this case in Texas with tenuous connections to Texas. And even the judge is like, come on. And so I'm just going to read a little bit and says, in a stunning move, Pittman, who's the judge, last week rejected a request by the banking trade groups to quickly pause the rule before it takes effect on May 14th. Pittman was unmoved. In a two-page order, he all but scolded the business groups for their efforts to educate the court on what they believe the court does and does not need. Man. He also gave a nod to concerns about his Texas district becoming a magnet for litigation, noting it saw more than 7,000 filings last year compared to nearly 4,500 in the District of Columbia. Given these statistics, the court does not have the luxury to give increased attention to certain cases just because a party to the case thinks their case is more important than the rest, he wrote. Wow.
Yeah, right.
And so also since that Politico story, the Congressional Research Service also has a paper out dealing sort of the effect, talking about the effect of forum shopping or judge shopping, which has a lot more information on it. I think this is very fascinating, especially if they can really get this under control, because this has become kind of ridiculous.
Totally.
So
yes.
That was my not as quick as I thought it was going to be follow-up, the news. The actual news is tomorrow the latest case in the abortion struggle is going to be in its hearing at the Supreme Court. This is about the FDA's attempts to make it easier to get mifepristone. And the New York Times has a really good article looking at how use of the abortion pill has changed since overturning Roe v. Wade, right? So a study published on Monday in the medical journal JAMA found that the number of abortion using pills obtained outside the formal health system soared in the 6 months after the national right to abortion was overturned. And they were before Roe was overturned, a lot of these outside online vendors, provided abortion pills to about 1,400 women per month. But in the 6 months afterward, the average jumped to about 5,900 per month. Hmm. And then there was a separate study that looked at how much from the Guttmacher Institute. And it says that medication abortion has now accounts for 63% of all abortions in the United States in 2023, up from 53% in 2020. It's a big jump. So these are sort of some of the conditions at play as this hearing starts tomorrow. And last thing I'll do is flag a piece in the 19th News about the Comstock Act, which is something I had not heard of before this. It's an 1873 anti-obscenity law that was written to curtail, quote, material intended for producing abortion or for any indecent or immoral use. This included birth control, pornography, and anything related to sexual health. The Comstock Act, obviously, has not been enforced since like the 1960s when Roe v. Wade came in. And the Congress has overturned the law's prohibition on mailing birth control, but has not acted to undo the full act. And so now, and in December 2022, the Department of Justice, I'm reading here from the 19th, issued a legal opinion arguing that the Comstock Act does not apply to mailing mifepristone or the other drug used in medication abortions because they have uses beyond abortion. But as you can imagine, and this is me not reading anymore, this act is coming into play in this case with people, the anti-abortion advocates saying that this is a law. It is still a law on the books. And this, the current, you know, way things are going runs afoul of it. So no good. And it'll be interesting to hear how the court interprets that.
Totally will. Also, one of the really interesting things about the trickle-down effects of the Dobbs decision, which is the one that overturned Roe v. Wade again, of course, is uncovering how many states have not necessarily archaic, but like mid-19th century laws that are kind of clicking into effect. It has happened in Michigan, although that one's been overturned. It happened in some other places. Restricting the right to abortion, and now obviously the Comstock Act, which for some reason the date 1876 sticks in my mind, but anybody can Google that and prove me wrong. But it's been a long time that it's been on the books. And we're now discovering, you know, how, I mean, you pass a law, it's a law, and that stuff kind of matters, you know?
Yeah. A long and variable lag almost to these.
Very nicely done.
Thank you very much.
Yes. All right. Shall do you have more or should we move on?
No, let's move
all
to
right,
the smiles.
Okay, let's move on. All right, what do you got?
I often find myself sort of like dredging the bottom of the barrel for Me Smiles. Yeah. And there's a website called goodnewsnetwork.org, and I go there sometimes and often find happy news because they, you know, have good news. Mm-hmm. It's funny, at the bottom of the page, it says, "Do you know a pessimist? Tell them to subscribe to our newsletter." And I thought of you, Kai.
Of course you did. Thank you very much. Love you too.
Yes, but this story grabbed my attention. It says, "Optimist pollster finds Americans are far more alike than different, with shared values bridging political divides." And this is actually the Harris poll. And it says, "Dubbed the most optimistic pollster in the country, the Harris Poll's chief executive, Will Johnson, says the supposed divides disappear when you consider values, points of views, and experiences beyond politics." A couple stats they highlighted here. 76% of Americans see the good in those they disagree with. 71% have a friend who doesn't share their views. 57% think the culture wars are overblown in terms of how important the issue of those debates are to daily life. 57% think most Americans get along with each other, and 56% believe that opportunities exist for nearly all to attain the American dream. So, you know, there's that.
Okay, I'm actually going to read that now because I find that very interesting. Also, I'm going to want to see the crosstabs. Right.
I don't want to see the crosstabs. Yeah. I just want to believe it. I just want to believe it.
Crosstabs, for those who don't follow polling, are breaking down by race, age, ethnicity, where you live, political affiliation, all those kinds of things. And
with the hint here that
yes. Okay.
Certain groups, probably white Americans, men, may feel a little bit more positively about things than others, given that they're more comfortable in this economy and in life. Yeah. But who knows? Yeah,
we'll
who
see.
Knows?
I'll dig out the cross steps. All right. So I fancy myself a trail runner, and I did my standard 5 miles this morning. Felt pretty good about it. It was super chilly and crisp up in the hills of Los Angeles County this morning, but it was great. There was a race last week, and the piece that we're going to put on the show page is from Friday's New York Times. It's about this. You can only call it eclectic and quirky trail race that happens in Tennessee. It's called the Barkley Marathons. It's basically a 100-mile race. You have to do 5 laps of a 20-mile course. It's all kinds of convoluted rules and all that jazz, but that's not the thing that I want to point out. You have to finish all 100 miles with crazy elevation gain in less than 60 hours. And this past week, a woman by the name of Jasmine Paris, she's from Midlothian, Scotland. She's a veterinarian there. She finished it with 99 seconds to spare. So she came in at 58 minutes and change after sprinting uphill, after running for 60 hours, sprinting uphill to finish this thing with 99 seconds to spare. It's unbelievable. I am not a trail runner. I'm a weenie. She is unreal. It's crazy.
This race came across like my Instagram Reels feed or whatever over the weekend because people were talking about how hard it is to even be able to run the race.
Right.
You have to write an essay. There's no website that tells you where to go. You have to like know somebody who can tell you how to apply. And then there's like all of these rules for making sure that you run the race a certain way. Absolutely intense.
It's so intense.
And there's, but good there's, for Jasmine.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And there's video of her sprinting that last, 100 yards up the hill to finish in 99 seconds short of 60 hours. It's crazy. It's so great. It's so cool. More power.
Yes.
Very cool. Very inspiring. All right. And with that, we're out of here. Back tomorrow, Tuesday. Till then, send us your comments, your questions. You know how to do that. Email is makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can leave us a message. Hello, Kai. 508-UB-SMART. 508-UB-SMART.
Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Today's program was engineered by Juan Carlos Torrado. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter, and our intern is Talia Menchaca.
Marissa Cabrera is our senior producer. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital. And for today, On Demand.
All right, let me see if I can fix my technology.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.